Hi, so thank you for inviting me. As I said, my name is Nadav Arel, and I will talk about a new operating system called OSV. OSV is a new operating system for virtual machines in the cloud. I'll talk in a minute why we need such a thing. It is open source, and it can run Linux software, existing software, but it is not based on Linux. It is BSD licensed, so it cannot be based on any Linux source code. And our mission statement of OSV is to become the default OS of virtual machines in the cloud. And note that I'm saying OS of virtual machines. I'm talking about the OS running on the guests in virtual machines. It's not an OS for running on the host, it's OS for virtual machines. So I guess the question is, why did we write OSV at all? What's wrong with Linux? We have Linux running most of the virtual machines in the cloud. Why do we need to write something else? And what makes OSV better? Okay, so OSV was written by a company I work for called Claudio Systems, which was founded by two people which you may know, which wrote KVM, the KVM hypervisor, Avi Kiviti and Dolo. And we have also a few employees like myself which have some experience in virtualizations and operating systems, and some serious investors. And we wrote OSV, and I'll try now to explain where this fits in, what is the problem with the existing situation of running Linux on guests. So if you look at a typical software stack running on a cloud, you'll see a lot of layers that got added like without really planning to have all these layers. It just happened. For example, when computers were invented, we had an application ran directly on hardware. But then people found out that writing applications directly for hardware is quite difficult, so they added an operating system between the hardware and the application. And then at some point we had different operating systems, each giving different features, and it was still hard to write programs on this. So they added another layer, like JVM, for example, which abstracts away much of the details of the operating systems and lets you write programs. And on the other end, when we wanted to run several operating systems on the same hardware, we invented hypervisors to run several operating systems on the hardware. So we end up with all these layers, and the really, issue that makes this an anomaly is that many of the layers do the same thing, basically. If you look at what a hypervisor and an operating system and JVM provide in this stack, a lot of what they provide is protection and abstraction. For example, the hypervisor lets you run several different guests on the same hardware and protects one from each other. And then what does the operating system do? It again lets you run several different processes on the same operating system and protects them one from another. So one has to ask, why do we even need these two different isolation methods? If we want to run several processes, we can, for example, have more VMs and run one process on each VM. And actually, a lot of people are already doing this. So a lot of VMs are running just one process, doing one thing. For example, memcached server on a VM, and it's just this process. You don't need any other processes. So we have these three layers providing many of the same features and wasting memory and performance and a lot of things by having all this duplication. And here's another slide of all the different duplication that these layers provide. And basically, we have too many layers, and they provide too little value. We don't have a lot of value in each of these layers. And we're not the first people to notice this, and one of the existing solutions is to use containers. Basically, if you use containers, you don't need the hypervisor. You can give up the hypervisor, and you can isolate the different applications inside the containers, and you gave up on one of these redundant layers. But the issue is that we believe that the hypervisor is here to stay. We believe it's a good thing, not only because the founders of the company wrote a hypervisor, but we really believe that the hypervisor is good. It's obviously it's common. If you go to Amazon, for example, you can buy a virtual machine. You can't buy containers on Amazon, for example. But it's not only common, it also has some interesting properties. It doesn't impose any specific operating system on the users, so you don't need all of your users to agree that they want to run Linux APIs or specific versions of these APIs. The hypervisor lets different users run different things, and it also, a lot of people believe it has better security and isolation properties than containers do, even though there have been a lot of progress in containers, but there's still a lot of belief that hypervisors are more secure and isolated. So instead of getting rid of the hypervisor, in OSV we decided to keep the hypervisor in this stack. We want to keep the hypervisor, but make the operating system much smaller and not have any of the redundant features that the hypervisor already gives, such as running several different applications on the same operating system. Okay, another thing to notice about the guest operating system is that it's becoming less and less important as time goes by. When we started with virtualization with VMware a lot of years ago already, basically people wanted to do physical to virtual. They wanted to take existing software and existing operating system running on a physical machine and move it to a virtual machine, and they wanted to continue to run the operating system that which they know and continue to configure it, manage it like they knew with, I don't know, SSH or some other method they were used to configuring the operating system, and they wanted it to be the same operating system they were familiar with. But as we move into the cloud, basically scalability became much more of an issue. You don't need anymore one web server and one mail server and so on, and configure each of them with your favorite operating system. You can have, in 1 hour, you can have, I don't know, five web servers, and then an hour later, you need 50 web servers to come up, and you're certainly not going to install operating systems and configure them or anything of this sort. So you start to have different configuration management, DevOps, whatever you want to call it, different mechanisms for hiding all this operating system detail from you, and you want to have just 50 web servers, virtual machines to come up, and you don't really care anymore what operating system is running them. You just want the smallest operating system, the fastest operating system, but you're not really, you don't have any more, you don't need to insist that it's some sort of specific version of a specific operating system that which you're used to. So if I try to summarize the roles of the operating system that we want to run virtual machines, on the left I have how Linux has been progressing over the last years. And on the right, what we believe is what is actually needed from a guest operating system. So Linux is growing up to support more and more hardware, more and more devices. Linux is becoming bigger with more and more services, more libraries, more layers, more configuration files, and so on. And it's becoming so complex that we need additional configuration management software to hide all this complexity from the actual application. And what we really need from the virtual machines OS is we actually just need a small amount of virtual hardware, because this operating system will only run on some hypervisor, which gives a very small number of devices which are relatively fixed, even if the underlying physical hardware changes. So it doesn't need to, we don't need a new driver to be written every day, but by one of thousands of developers. We actually have a small number of devices. We need fewer and fewer services, because instead of more services, we need fewer services. And one of the examples I like is that a few years ago, nobody would think that you could have an operating system which doesn't have a file system. For example, file system is obviously something which you need on an operating system, but actually on the cloud, you can perhaps have an application that uses some remote, some cloud service for storage, such as, I don't know, Amazon S3 or some other key value store or something like that. And you can even get away with having an operating system which doesn't have a file system. And OSV does have a file system, but my point is that we don't need more and more services from the operating system. We actually need fewer and fewer services on the guest operating system. And we just need a single application to run on this single guest. If we need more applications, we can run more VMs. We don't need users like we have on Linux. We don't need configuration. If we want to, I don't know, we had some web server running in some way, and we want to run something else, we just want to stop the one that is running and run a new one. We don't want to change configuration and configuration files and things like that. And for that, we want to have agility. We want to be able to boot very fast and a new image and things like that. So clearly, the way Linux is progressing is not exactly what we need for running on virtual machines. So our motto is less is more. So I'll just repeat this again in case somebody didn't follow. So OSV comes in this stack in place of the operating system in the guest. So it runs under the hypervisor. It's not an operating system for the host. It's not a new hypervisor. It's a guest operating system which you run on the virtual machines. And I said that less is more, but I'll give some more details about what is the value that OSV intends to give over just using Linux for guests. So we want to be the best operating system powering virtual machines in the cloud. We run existing applications. So you can take existing Linux binaries, which don't do things which we don't support, like forking, for example, because we support threads but not processes, like I mentioned earlier. So you can take existing binaries and just run them on OSV. And one of the interesting things you can run on OSV is to run a managed runtime like JVM. And once you have JVM running, you can, of course, run whatever you can run on JVM, like any Java program or Scala or JavaScript or JRuby or whatever you want to run on JVM. Once we got JVM to work correctly, then everything that runs on a JVM obviously runs also. So OSV is faster than Linux. We already showed several benchmarks. I mean, on some benchmarks we show some small improvements, a few percent, but on some specific benchmarks we got the most significant improvement. But this is just the beginning of OSV, so we plan it to be much better in the future. The OSV will let more memory to be used by the actual application because less memory is wasted by the operating system, and also for other reasons I'll talk about later. It's very fast to boot, less than 1 second. It has no configuration files or state. You can just build a new image and boot it in less than 1 second. Because we are writing a new operating system, we can have some sort of synergy between the JVM and the operating system. I'll show some examples later. And you can have lower administration costs, for obviously, if you have less configuration. And also, because the operating system is much smaller and much less complicated to build, you can have the actual OS can be cheaper. I mean, it's a bit strange to say because both OSV and Linux are free software, so you can ask how can zero be less than zero. But if you're looking for support from some company, I don't know, you want to buy Linux with support or OSV with support, it will be easier to support OSV than supporting Linux. So at the end, the idea is that OSV will give you a much better performance per dollar than running Linux on the GES. And like I said, you can run on OSV mostly anything which you can run on Linux. And these are just some examples. A lot of these we already ran ourselves, and some of them we didn't actually try, but there's no reason why they shouldn't work. And OSV is, like I said, open source software, so I invite everyone to try their favorite software on top of OSV. And we are very active in continuing to improve it, and it's also, I mean, the open source project also has a lot of interest, so if you find any bugs, then we'll be very happy to fix and get all of these things running on OSV, and basically anything. So like I said, the first step of the OSV development plan was to get it launched as open source software, which we got, which we did on September. So basically since September you can already get OSV. It's already working and it's on GitHub. You can, I'll show later a link. And if you're curious why we open sourced this operating system, first of all, the idea is to have wide adoption. If Cloudy Systems is a small startup company, so if we offered any of you to run your critical software on some new operating system which is developed by a startup company, which you have no idea if this company will even still exist next year, then you'll be very skeptical. So the idea is that if we put this out as open source software, like I said, with the BSD license, then basically you don't care if we go under next year or anything. You can have the source code. This project can get a life of its own even without Cloudy Systems. So we believe this will bring much better adoption than a commercial product would. And it's also a way to get validation that it actually works. We'll get a lot of people to just try OSV and see how it works for them, how it improves the performance of their applications and so on. And they'll find bugs. We already have a lot of contributors from outside of Cloudy Systems working on OSV. And again, we want to have collaboration with people like yourselves, with everyone who can, who is interested in trying to improve the performance, the memory use, whatever, of virtual machines, to try their own applications, to tell us what would your dream operating systems for virtual machines be, so OSV can improve. Okay, so after we have the open source, the next thing we want to try is to have like virtual appliances based on OSV. For example, right now if you want to run, let's say Memcached on Linux, you can build an image with Memcached and Linux, and we want to also build images like that, for example Memcached and OSV, and see how this, how we can make these images better than the existing ones that people use. And the idea for having, why we want to have such virtual appliances is, first of all, to have some focus in our development. We can try to improve these specific virtual machines first and see the how we can improve the performance and so on. And also to narrow our support burden, because we're a small company, and if people came with 1,000 different bugs at the same time, it will be pretty difficult to fix all of them at the same time. So we want to start with a few different things, and it would be a proof of concept, an example of how we can improve performance for specific applications. And then, of course, the next phases will, after we have some specific applications, we'll have some sort of general availability to just use in your favorite cloud. You can use OSV instead of Linux or Windows as the operating systems for operating system for your guests. Okay, so you're probably curious about what's different in OSV, and so I'll give you a few technical details about how was OSV written. So like I said, it's not, even though it runs Linux binaries, it's definitely not based on Linux, because Linux has a different license. It's actually a new kernel written from scratch in C++ 11. So I guess a few eyebrows probably are raised when you hear about an operating system written in C++, but actually C++ 11 is a really excellent language for writing kernels. I can talk an all hour about that, but we don't really have time, but believe me, it's a very good language to write the kernel. We use the ZFS file system, which was mentioned a few times in this conference already, because we think this is one of the best file systems available, and it also has the right license, the BSD license, so we took that. And we started with the TCP/IP stack from FreeBSD, which we used, but we are now replacing it with a more efficient one, which I'll talk about in a few slides. And OSV currently runs on 64-bit x86, and it runs already on KVM and on Xen, and we plan to soon have it also running on VMware, and in the future we'll also want to run it on ARM and other architectures. That also depends on if we get volunteers that want to port OSV to other architectures. We'll be very happy. Okay, so why did we even write a new kernel instead of taking some existing kernel and ripping the parts we don't need out or something like that? So writing a new kernel allows us to make completely different assumptions than the existing kernels do. The existing Linux and FreeBSD and so on, all of them have been written decades ago with certain assumptions, and then have progressed for all sorts of different things. People now run Linux on supercomputers and on phones and everything, and basically it has all these assumptions that are not relevant anymore, and we have different assumptions, and we want to make an operating system which is perfect for the new assumptions that we have. And writing a new kernel also makes it much easier to experiment with new ideas that we have, and maybe some of you have some ideas what you would want in a kernel of virtual machines, so we can experiment with that. And we can try new APIs, and of course we can have smaller code, which is good because less is more, but also smaller code is faster, and smaller code is easier to develop than huge code bases. And some of the design principles behind OSV, so I already mentioned that we don't have processes because we don't need them, because the hypervisor gives this capability already of running different applications in VMs. So basically we have a single address space, and we don't have processes, just threads, and we don't need a separate kernel space. We don't need any protection between user space and the kernel, because our kernel is just running a single process, just a single application. There's nothing, I mean, if the application does something wrong, the worst it can do is to ruin things for itself. It cannot hurt any other application. So we don't need this extra protection, and if we just want a bit of safety for the application, the JVM, for example, also provides another layer of safety. So we really don't need all this protection inside the operating system, and by not having it, we can save a lot of time. For example, we don't need to copy system call arguments. System calls are just normal function calls. And when we switch threads, you don't have to mess with the page tables. There's a lot of performance benefits of having just a single address space. And so one of them is we have very cheap threads and context switches. So we don't even need an interrupt context in the kernel. We just wake up a handler thread. And because of that, we don't need spin locks. Spin locks are a very common mechanism in all existing kernels. But inside a VM, the spin locks cause the lock holder's preemption problem. I don't know if people heard about this, but it's a known problem with operating systems in VMs, and there have been a lot of workarounds to avoid this problem. And instead, OSV simply doesn't use any spin locks in its implementation. It doesn't have an interrupt context, which often needs the spin locks, and we have lock-free mutexes, so it doesn't use spin locks. And solve this problem. And like I said, we emulate Linux. You can run Linux binaries without any modifications on OSV. But we do just enough of this so we can run important applications that are important for the cloud, and things like the JVM, inside which you can run anything that runs on a JVM. But we don't do more emulation than necessary. We don't need to emulate features that nobody has been using for last 20 years. So we're not building a completely Linux clone, just what we need for running on virtual machines. And in addition to emulating Linux, we also want to have new APIs that applications that are aware of OSV can use to have even better performance. So, for example, if you want to have zero-copy I/O, and one of the interesting things we want to do is to do things that will help us make the JVM perform better. So for example, two things we already started doing is, one of them is a technique we can use to have the JVM and the OS basically share memory. One of the annoying features of the JVM is that you have to determine in advance how much heap do you want to give the, okay, how big you want the heap of the JVM to be, and basically the JVM just takes all this memory and uses it for its own heap, and you have to pick this heap size to be the maximum that you'll ever need during the run. And on the other hand, the operating system also wants to use as much memory as it can for its performance. So the idea is that if the JVM and the operating system can talk, we can have the JVM lend memory to the operating system. The operating system can come to the JVM and tell it, okay, I need 100 megabytes now. Can you take 100 megabytes out of your heap and give it to me? And this will happen. So then what will happen is that on OSV, you can run a JVM and give it all the physical memory, all the memory that you have on the virtual machine, you can give the JVM for its heap, and you don't need to leave a lot of memory for the operating systems like you normally need to do for Linux or other operating systems. And another idea is to have faster garbage collection when you let the JVM basically look at the page table dirty bits. Because right now the JVM has all sorts of tricks to emulate this thing, because it cannot look directly at the page tables, but in OSV we can actually give it direct access to the page tables. We don't care, there's no security issues or things like that if the JVM accesses the page tables. Another thing we've been doing, like I said, we took we started with the TCP/IP from FreeBSD, but we are now replacing it with net channels, which is an idea from Van Jacobsen from a few years ago, which basically are more appropriate for modern machines, because the idea is that you do most of the processing on the application's core. When an application does a read, then do you start to process the packets and build the data which you need to give the application, instead of doing this in the interrupt time. And it's much better on modern SMPs. So this is basically it. Thank you for listening. These are some links you can use. The first one is our website. The second one is the GitHub, where you can get the source code, and you can, on the bottom there's a mailing list, which is very active, and you can join this mailing list and talk to everybody that has been working on OSV, not just in Cladio Systems. There's a Twitter, I don't know if anybody writes anything on it, but we do have one. That's it. Thank you.
So this is a really interesting model. What's your idea for debugging applications in this kind of system?
One of the things you can do, you can run this on a virtual machine on your local machine. We run it on KVM or something in your local development machine. And you can actually attach a debugger like GDB directly to the guest. This is how we have been debugging. You can debug the kernel and the applications in this way. You can just use GDB on the host and debug this. It's of course much harder if you want to debug something which is already in production, running on some cloud, and you want now to debug this code, but you'll have the same problem also if you run this code on Linux on a cloud. You cannot really use like a normal debugger on the cloud. It's not a very efficient way, and you don't even know which virtual machine to connect to. So then you can do things like tracing, I don't know, have logs, things like that, to debug like a production system. Basically, you can do the same things which you right now you can do in Linux. It's the same tools will work.
Hello. It's kind of odd to see this, since I saw an architecture like this about 15 years ago, called Novell NetWare, believe it or not. it was a cooperatively multitasked kernel, runs on threads just like that, single address space. And the similarities are so very similar. I do wonder if you guys have had a similar background, but I do want to say something else. You are right, things do run faster than that. I was actually running Tomcat on those systems for a long time, and it really does run fast on their Java in that same sort of system. So I was wondering, did you come at this yourself, or were you actually inspired by those old, much maligned systems?
Yeah. So people even ask us, what's new about this? MS-DOS did running one application, I don't know, 30 years ago. I don't even know how many years ago. So just running one application is not a good idea unless you have some other mechanism to actually let you run different applications. So the new thing is that now we have this hypervisor, which has become very common, and it is letting us run different. It lets you run several applications on the same hardware, so you don't need another feature. So I can't say we were inspired by MS-DOS or Novell or things like that, but of course, now that it's actually okay to go back to having just one process, then we can do perhaps some of the things they did back then. But I don't know, none of these things have been open source software, so we can't really look at the code and learn ideas from them, but OSV is now open source software, so people can look at what we are doing.
G'day. A couple of quick questions. Fascinating, really, really fascinating idea. The first, and I may have misheard, obviously, you're supporting the JVM, but I thought I heard you say you don't need threads.
No, no, we do need threads. Okay. We don't support processes. We obviously do support threads, and they are very important.
Good.
Yeah.
So, second question: as part of debugging, and Narayan asked something similar, what if I'd like to do things like run TCP dump so that I can analyze a connection issue? Do you have any thoughts about how standard or traditional observability works? When much of the code path, which you've removed for performance, has taken the instrumentation with it.
Yeah. So maybe it will be. I mean, if you're used to doing some, I don't know, running Wireshark, and you right. want this specific program to run on OSV, then maybe you'll have a problem because it's a separate process, and it will be hard to get it to run on the same. OSV and so on, but it's so I don't know. Like I said, OSV is still young, and we're still trying to figure out exactly how people will use it, and we're looking for people like yourselves to actually try to use it and tell us what is missing or how to improve it. But all the features, I mean, there's no. We're not missing a feature of being able to look at packets, or we're not missing the features to do tracing. We have, like people mentioned earlier in this conference, dtrace, so we have our own tracing mechanism. You can do a lot of things. It will be harder to run specific applications that you're used to inside OSV, but it shouldn't. I mean, there's nothing actually preventing you from running these debugging applications also. I guess we'll have to wait and see how people are debugging on OSV.
Okay, thanks. And I think it's a problem of, as you say, it's you can do much of this yourself, but with OSV, the performance benefits should be clear. But for many users, if they need to go and relearn a new performance tool set, it may take time and they may miss out on some typical wins.
Yeah.
Even though it's technically possible, it just becomes an education issue.
Yeah. Now, also, like I said, usually for development, if you're just developing, not testing this on the on the production machine. If you're doing this for development, you can just run it on a virtual machine on your local host and use all the normal tools. We use Perf, the Linux Perf. You can okay. you can have, do this, and you can use Wireshark on your host, and you can use all the usual tools which you use on the host. You can use.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, great talk. Possibly a heretical line of questioning, and apologies in advance. So, if I'm running OSV as the guest, yeah. and imagine I'm only running OSV as the guest, what, how would you redesign a better hypervisor to take advantage of the fact that you're doing that? And then the second question is, well, if you, you have a hypothetically an OSV-specific hypervisor, at what point have we just recreated a non-hypervised virtualized operating system with process isolation?
Yeah, so... So, okay, so I think the issue is that the interface between the hypervisor and the guest, for example, OSV. So now we have the interface is basically the x86 machine architecture, plus a few things like virtio for power virtual IO on KVM and so on. So this is the interface that OSV uses to talk to the hypervisor, and it's different from other interfaces. That, for example, when you have in containers, for example, you have a much wider interface, a much bigger API that the program can use. And here, OSV can only use this x86 architecture interface. So, I don't know. You're asking if OSV wins and becomes the default the default guest, then maybe I don't know. Maybe the hypervisor will start to change to be better for OSV. I don't even know what to guess will happen in that case, but. It's possible in some. I mean, it's even possible at some point to just drop the. You don't. It's strange that one piece of software emulates x86 and then the other assumes it. It emulates it and uses it. We could have invented a completely new interface between the hypervisor and the guest and make it as small as possible and have. Something completely different, and I think Microsoft has a project doing something like that, which they invented some sort of new interface with just I think 40 calls or something like that, which the guest can use to run processes on the host. But I don't know. I think that for now the hypervisor is not going away anytime soon, and. I think we need a better operating system for the hypervisor that we already have right now.
Thank you very much. Great talk.
Thank you.